You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. Today's show is brought to you by Ducks Unlimited. If you'd like to help a DU chapter or start one in your area, go to www.volunteers.ducks.org. You can make a difference.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreeslein is going to be with you for the next hour. A number of guests are going to join us. We'll have Corey Goldsworthy from the Minnesota DNR. He is a fishery specialist up on Lake Superior. We're going to talk about all the ciscos out in that lake here the past couple of years and what it means for sport fishing, the fact that the trout and salmon are big and fat and happy and sassy thanks to all that forage. It's going to be a fun interview with Corey here in a little bit. We'll also talk with Mark Kenyon. Mark is with the Working for Wildlife Tour. They are coming to Minnesota later this month in August with an event up in Ely. We'll talk to Mark a little bit about that. Les Meister will help me wrap up the show here in about 45 minutes, but I'm going to kick it off with the one and only Tim Spielman, the editor at Outdoor News. And Tim, it is Game Fair weekend, first weekend of Game Fair this Friday, August 9th.
The weather looks great.
It does. It absolutely does. I mean, what a beautiful week just transpired here, and it looks absolutely perfect for Game Fair. I mean, highs in the 70s, maybe low 80s by Sunday, and bluebird skies. I think we got this coming.
Yeah, we're due. And when it comes to Game Fair, I'm just happy for all the dogs. I probably brought it up before, but I think it's cool that there's so many dog events. I think it's cool that people can bring their dogs. Dog-centric show. They're kind of the stars in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. and I think I counted 11 different dog games on the Game Fair ad. So, I mean, it's a place to bring them. Just keep them cool and keep them watered.
Dogs get in free. Ron Husfeld always likes to remind folks. So I will be out there knocking out a podcast with Mark Norcos. We'll probably have some of the interviews from that on next week's broadcast. But overall, I'm just excited for Game Fair. Looking forward to two weekends. Please stop by the Outdoor News booth and renew your subscription. Say hi. Pick up a free copy of the paper if you don't have one. We've got a bunch of headlines in this week's paper that Mr. Spielman put on the front page. The big one is we've got, we kind of know how the whitetail deer hunting season is going to break down here in Minnesota this fall, huh?
Yeah, I think the, according to the story that Natalie Ryder wrote, didn't come as a surprise. We had an incredibly mild past winter, and you know that's had an effect on deer. I actually, Rob, I pulled a trail cam card the other night. There was I've seen a doe with a fawn, but there was also a doe with twins. So I kind of thought that we wouldn't, even though we had a mild winter, we wouldn't go too crazy in changing DPAs based on deer survival this year. There are some areas that were hit kind of hard for two winters in a row, and it's going to take more than 1 year for a population to bounce back. So the bottom line was that the DNR didn't increase the harvest limits in any of the DPAs this year. I guess I'm not sure if it was reduced in some. I sort of doubt it, you know, if not even northeastern Minnesota had severe winter this year. So it would make sense that most things when it comes to limits in various DPAs and series locations, pretty much the same yet this year.
Yeah, officially the DNR saying 99 deer permit areas have the same designation as last year. So not going any more liberal, not going any more conservative. 30 mm-hmm. DPAs, mostly, like you say, in the northern portion of the state, have lowered bag limits, and that they're going to reduce the harvest of antlerless deer. Again, the idea is we want to increase deer populations up there. And per the DNR, no DPAs increased the bag limit. So everything right. is status right. quo or more conservative than a year ago, which, especially mm-hmm. considering the fact that we had, you know, one of the mildest winters we can ever remember. The DNR saying we're not going to liberalize things. We want to, you know, let this herd bounce back, enjoy the fruits of the labor that we went through with this mild winter last year. And, mm-hmm. and we're probably one more mild winter like that away from having a really burgeoning white-tailed deer population in the state, I would think.
I would think so, too. I don't see it happening, but if it's anything even close to last winter, you know, in terms of not super heavy snowfall or not a whole string of really, really cold days, well, we'll track it during the winter. We look at the winter severity index, and last year there's no point even pulling it up on the internet because you knew there was nothing even in the way of mild severity. So again, likely won't happen this year, but if it is somewhat mild to moderate, yeah, I think you're right. I think we'll see some changes a year from now.
Yeah, who knows? If these moisture trends continue across the region through the winter, we could get buried. So who knows? Or then again, it might be another drought. You know, this September 5th is the deadline hunters to buy their license in antlerless permit lottery areas. If you want to, you know, be put into that lottery, you need to apply by Thursday, September 5th. That's a date for a number of years we've kind of been able to ignore, right, because there's so many antlerless tags. This year, maybe people need to highlight that on the calendar a little bit more if they do want to get a doe tag.
Yeah, there are certain areas. I mean, down the southwest where I hunted in the past, we made pretty much a habit of applying every year. It was just lottery areas down there in some of the ag country. So you've got your areas up in the northeast, northern Minnesota, where you have to apply, but there are some in the south as well.
Deer licenses are on sale, folks. They went on sale August 1st. So if you want to buy your license, get ahead of that. The archery opener is Saturday, September 14th, and the regular firearms opener Saturday, November 9th.
So, and the just to mention, Rob, the regulations are out now. So you can pick those up where you normally do or go online and check out everything there is to know about deer hunting this year, as well as all the other hunting seasons.
And I usually pick my regs up out at Game Fair. So another plug at Game Fair, the DNR booth. They've usually got stacks of them there. That's a good place to grab them every year. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline with Tim Spielman. We are kicking off this week's broadcast. We talked a little bit about the deer hunt breakdown. Tori McCormick also had a story on the front page. Tim, we talked about this several weeks ago. I think I heard about it, and we got Tori on it, that the Center for Disease Control had some fairly strong restrictions, new restrictions for dog importation rules, canine importation rules. We had some people really upset about it. It called us. I think it's kind of a pretty small subset of dog owners out there, but if it affects you, it's 100%. Tori reporting this week that based on the backlash that CDC received, they are making the rules a little less onerous, I think is the term he used.
Yeah. I honestly, it wasn't a consideration that had entered my mind before we heard from some folks who were concerned about it. And also now with this clarification, it makes me wonder how much time was actually put into the original guidelines and who they talk to. You know, sometimes it seems to me like your local friendly government will come out with a rule, and then all of a sudden they'll hear from people and go, "Oh, we didn't consider that," and it makes you wonder, maybe you should consider it or ask people. I mean, it's not like the groups that would be affected, your Ducks Unlimited, your Delta Waterfowl, and in this case, the Sportsman's Alliance Foundation, which is considering a lawsuit if things aren't, I think they're actually looking for even greater change, right? But to have to go back and do this again, it seems very inefficient to me.
Yeah, I agree. And check out Tori's story for all the details. And who knows, maybe the goalposts are going to move on this again based on, you know, potential litigation.
But if you are going to Canada this year duck hunting and you're taking your dog, it's probably good to check out those websites and make sure your ducks are in a row.
Yep. Hey, a couple other deadlines we should mention, Tim. Next Friday, August 16th, deadline to apply for special youth deer hunts. Also, you need to apply for that prairie chicken lottery by next Friday. So, a lot of, it's really that time of year, these deadlines are piling up. All right, well, Tim, Game Fair kicking off. Hope you have a good weekend. Hope to see lots of our listeners out there, and we will talk to you again next week.
Sounds really good.
All right, Tim Spielman, editor at Outdoor News. We will break. We'll be back, and I think we'll talk with Corey Goldsworthy from the Minnesota DNR. When we return, this is Outdoor News Radio.
Hunting season will be here before you know it, and it's time to get ready for your next adventure with the OnX Hunt app. Whether you're traveling in search of roosters, elk, waterfowl, or looking to score on a whitetail close to home, OnX Hunt can help you be more successful this season. Route, plan, and navigate with private and public land boundaries, recent imagery, offline maps, and Minnesota-specific hunt layers. Download the Hunt app on the App Store or Google Play and join the millions of hunters that trust OnX Hunt.
Minnesota's largest outdoor event returns for its 43rd year, Game Fair. Check out dozens of hunting, fishing, and dog training seminars. Visitors can see more than 300 exhibitors, plus enjoy games for dogs and youth. Test the latest equipment and enjoy the world-famous duck and goose calling contest. Game Fair runs 2 weekends, rain or shine, August 9th, 10th, and 11th, and August 16th, 17th, and 18th at the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey. See details at gamefair.com.
Ready for your next fishing adventure? Look no further than Lake City, Minnesota. Located in southeast Minnesota, nestled along the shores of Lake Pepin, this charming town offers some of the best fishing in the Midwest. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, Lake Pepin is teeming with walleye, bass, and more. And when you're not on the water, explore Lake City's quaint shops, delicious dining, and scenic beauty. Go to visitlakecity.org today and plan your trip to Lake City, Minnesota's South Shore.
Looking for the perfect summer getaway? Look no further than Minnesota's own Lake of the Woods. Welcome to the walleye capital of the world, where the next hook set could be your personal best fish of a lifetime. But it's not just about the fishing. From cozy resorts to charming lodges, Lake of the Woods offers summer fun for everyone. Plus, our charters and expert fishing guides are ready to make your experience unforgettable. Discover the magic of Lake of the Woods. Visit lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Since 1967, generations of Minnesota sportsmen have trusted Outdoor News to keep them up to date with the latest news, pro tips, features, fishing reports, gear reviews, and more. For less than a buck per week, you can carry on the tradition and join thousands of Minnesota sportsmen by subscribing to Outdoor News. Whether you prefer a printed copy in your mailbox each week or the convenience of up-to-the-minute news on your smartphone or computer, we've got you covered. Subscribe today at outdoornews.com/subscribe.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Gerisline. Thanks so much for tuning in. Hope you like the broadcast. If you do, check us out online at outdoornews.com, or you can give us a call at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to print or digital versions either via that website or the phone number, or come out and visit us at Game Fair. We have a booth there next week and the next 2 weekends, as well as State Fair later in August. I will be at the booth frequently. Looking forward to meeting folks. I want to talk about a cooler part of the state, Lake Superior, and some really good news brewing up there if you like trout and salmon fishing. And here to help me chat about that a little bit is Corey Goldsworthy. He is the Lake Superior Fisheries Supervisor out of Duluth for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and he joins us now. Corey, thanks for carving out some time. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Rob. Appreciate it.
So, Corey, you're out of Duluth. You're managing the big water up there, the fisheries that we've got up there. We've got a number of incredible species, lake trout probably front and center, but also some great Chinook salmon and coho salmon and other species, right? Steelhead, too. I can't forget steelhead.
Yeah, we do for sure. You know, Lake Superior is primarily a lake trout lake. Out of all of the Great Lakes, we were the only one to retain any wild lake trout populations when sea lamprey invaded in the 50s. Mm. So we kind of got a jump start on lake trout rehabilitation compared to the other Great Lakes. We think we've pretty much rehabilitated lake trout. They're, you know, high densities of them. You know, we also have fishable populations of coho, chinook, steelhead, etc.
The big story up there is we had a massive year class of ciscos a couple years ago in 2022. And just so people understand, a cisco equals a lake herring equals a tulipy. They're all the same species, right? They're members of the whitefish family. They don't get as big as lake whitefish, but they're a really important forage fish on the lake. And what happened 2 years ago that sprung this massive year class of these fish into Lake Superior?
Right. So for Lake Superior Cisco, we know they spawn every year in the fall. We know those eggs hatch every year, but it's not always those newly hatched fish live to be age one. If they do live to age one, we know we'll see them as spawning adults and they'll show up in the commercial fishery and ice anglers will be able to catch them. So in a typical year, say a 10-year time frame, we might see small what we call recruitment events, those small fish surviving to be adult fish. So we'll see a small recruitment event about twice every 10 years or so. And in 2022, we saw what we would consider a boom year class. And the last time that we had a year class this big or anywhere near this big was 1984. And this current 2022 year class is about 25% larger than that 1984 year class.
Wow. So this is a rare event. And this means there's a lot of these Cisco swimming around the lake. I told you off air a little bit. I remember Tom Dixon back in the day when he was helping out on a story for the conservation volunteer. He called Cisco's cheeseburgers with fins because they're members of the, like I said, the trout and salmon, the whitefish family. They're real oily. They have a lot of calories. And so they're, you know, an awesome forage fish for these other sport fish that we mentioned, steelhead, Chinook, and coho salmon. So has that translated all these fish swimming around into bigger, better game fish for anglers?
Absolutely. Yep. And it was almost an immediate response to Lake Superior actually having forage or plentiful forage. You know, because compared to, say, Lake Michigan, which everybody always gets compared to in regards to salmon fishing, Lake Superior is deep. Over 80% of Lake Superior is over 240 feet deep. We're really cold. We're a glacial lake, relatively unproductive compared to the other Great Lakes. Before rainbow smelt invaded in the 40s, Cisco were the main prey fish for lake trout in Lake Superior. When smelt came in, they kind of took over as the main forage item for lake trout. But with this 2022 year class and the numbers of fish that we're seeing out there, it is by far the most plentiful prey fish available right now. We saw an almost immediate response in steelhead, larger steelhead. We've broken the coho state record three times in the last year. Chinook salmon. I was talking to an angler the other day. They're catching larger Chinook salmon on Lake Superior than they are on Lake Michigan, which we never hear about. And I love to hear it, but this might be the only time in my career that I actually hear that coming from an angler. So it's been great fishing. I was a little concerned that with this much forage out there, those fish would be less likely to bite, but it sounds like it's been a great year for fishing and really large, good eating fish out there as well.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions is, does all this forage swimming around mean it's tougher for anglers? But I'm glad to hear, you know, it's still been a solid bite. A couple of interesting points there. One, I think it's worth noting that Cisco / lake herring are a native species, right? Smelt or not? Smelt, did they come in through the seaway or were they stocked?
Correct. Cisco are native to the Great Lakes, and Cisco came in, I believe it was through like a inland lake or inland pond transfer type event into the Great Lakes.
And smelted, right.
And it was kind of a time period where, you know, as sea lamprey started to invade the Great Lakes and wipe out the top level native predator in lake trout, as smelt came in, there wasn't a top level predator to, you know, keep their populations in check. So you'll remember these huge smelt die-offs of the 60s and 70s. So, you know, you have a top level predator gone, a new forage fish comes in invasive, and they just explode in population. Yep.
Yeah.
And so we start to see during that 50s, 60s, 70s time period, Cisco populations drop. And then we got a little bit of a boom back again in the 80s. And here we are again in 2022 with really, really good numbers. Once in a career opportunity to see this number of Cisco out there.
That's fantastic. You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreisline chatting with Corey Goldsworthy. He is the Minnesota DNR's Lake Superior Fisheries Supervisor out of Duluth, talking about a massive year class of Ciscos / tulibies on Lake Superior and what it's meaning for great angling and bigger fish up on Minnesota's greatest of lakes. Another stat you threw out, I got to have you repeat this. Did you say 80% of the water in Lake Superior is more than 240 feet deep? That's amazing. That would mean only 20% of that lake's water is above 240 feet in depth?
That's correct. I think officially it's 86%, but you know, I hate throwing out stats if I don't have them in front of me. So yeah, definitely greater than 80% is over that 240 foot mark. And especially on the Minnesota shoreline, if you look at a bathymetry chart on our north shore, you can pretty much throw a rock out of Silver Bay and hit 300 feet of water. So
it gets deep really fast, huh?
Yeah. It gets deep really fast. So we have a very limited amount of what we would call lean lake trout habitat, which is that shallower than 240 feet. Deep, cold, relatively unproductive, not a lot of forage fish out there in a given year. We did a lake-wide diet study in 2021, and the folks over here in Michigan that were processing our stomach samples said, hey, there's a problem with your schnooks on the North Shore. All they're eating are terrestrial insects. And in 2021, it was a low smelt year. We didn't have any Cisco recruitment, so there really wasn't a lot of forage around, which is kind of par for the course for cold, deep Lake Superior.
That's why it takes a sport fish up there longer to grow larger than a lake like Lake Michigan, shallower and more forage, unless a year like this comes along, you know, when you get this great Cisco year class swimming around. And that's why it's so much fun to talk about this right now. That's why it's newsworthy. What's going to happen when these tulabies get too large to become forage? And that might be sooner than we think, right? These things can get pretty big pretty fast.
Correct. Yeah. You know, they evolved with lake trout. So I think their life history is grow as fast as you can in those first 2 years of life, get out of that predator effect of lake trout. Right. So right now they're a year and a half old, and the Ciscos are a year and a half old from that 2022 year class. And they're right around 6 to 10 inches. So by the time this fall rolls around, and definitely next spring, you know, there'll be a portion of that population that's probably too big to be eaten by coho and chinook. At some point here, they'll be too large to be consumed by the non-native salmonids. And we'll kind of, I think, go back to what a typical size coho and chinook salmon is in Lake Superior. So if folks are excited and want to chase after that coho state record, or, you know, there's predictions that this chinook record is going to fall this year at 33.4 pounds, you know, get out there now and chase those things.
Yeah, it might bode well for fishing next year when those tulabies get too large for the sport fish to nab. They're still going to be hungry and then maybe a little more willing to chase an angler's lure. Finally, there's a fair number of people that are more than happy to eat tulabies themselves, right? The tulabies could be a commercial, there's commercial fishing for them, right? But they can be a fun species to catch through the ice, Lake Mille Lacs and other places. There's folks who chase tulabies. They're a little bony, but once you people smoke them, whatever. My point is the tulabies themselves could become a legitimate sport fishery here in the next year or two.
Oh, absolutely. And they already are, really. Our commercial fishery on the Minnesota shoreline is primarily the Cisco fishery. And in ice cover years, the sport fishery for Cisco can be really good as well. You know, they can live to be 20, 30, even approaching 40 years old. So they're a long-lived species. And I'm really excited for an ice cover event in the next 10 years and to see the amount of adult Cisco swimming around down there. Because in a relatively low population size, when you're out there ice fishing, you see big schools of these things come through. And it's really awesome to see on Lake Superior fishing over 100 feet of water and just seeing a huge school of fish come in right underneath the ice. So to have this amount of biomass of adult Cisco coming into the system is going to be an incredible opportunity to see as ice anglers. And it's really going to change, you know, Lake Superior for the next 10 to 20 years. We're going to have to kind of shift our minds a little bit in what Lake Superior is. And it's going to be an exciting few years because nobody has seen this before in our careers.
Key to having good ice fishing for these things will be getting good ice, right? I know the ice can be a little hit and miss up there depending on the weather. Last year wasn't very good. So we can get some good ice combined with these great electronics everybody's using now where they can locate these schools of lake herring. It could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it could be. And, you know, that it all kind of rolls into the same story is, you know, what we think we know about successful recruitment for Cisco on Lake Superior is you have to have cold June water temperatures, like really cold. We used to think it was related to ice cover events, which it is, because if you get an ice cover event, more than likely you're going to have cold June water temperatures. But what we've seen over the last particularly 100 years is we've seen a decline in ice cover on Lake Superior. So right now it's about once every 10 years we see a decent amount of ice. But, you know, when that comes in and like 2014, the polar vortex year was a great year to be fishing Lake Superior. You could get out there over 200, 250 feet of water fishing no problem. So, you know, I think everybody's going to be really excited for the first hard winter. Somewhat excited, yeah. Right? Hard winters are never fun, but fishing on Lake Superior is awesome.
There you go. Good reason to hope for a tough winter.
That's
well,
right.
Corey, great information. A lot of fun catching up. This is a great story, a fun story that I think a lot of people don't understand. Bottom line, great opportunity to get up there and fish for trout and salmon now while these fish are really, really hammering this incredible year class of Ciscos. Corey, thanks for spending time with me. Have a good week ahead.
Thanks for having me. You too.
That was Corey Goldsworthy from the Minnesota DNR Fisheries out of Duluth talking about fishing opportunities on the Big Lake, Minnesota's greatest of great lakes, Lake Superior. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages. Minnesota's largest outdoor event returns for its 43rd year, Game Fair. Check out dozens of hunting, fishing, and dog training seminars. Visitors can see more than 300 exhibitors, plus enjoy games for dogs and youth. Test the latest equipment and enjoy the world-famous duck and goose calling contest. Game Fair runs 2 weekends, rain or shine, August 9th, 10th, and 11th, and August 16th, 17th, and 18th at the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey. See details at gamefair.com.
Fort Dodge, Iowa, outdoor and entertainment adventures are awaiting you. Discover Iowa's largest off-highway vehicle park, Gypsum City OHV Park, with 60 miles of trails, mudding areas, tracks, and an obstacle course. The area also boasts water, paved mountain bike, and equestrian trails. Head into town to enjoy public art and studios, an orchard, aquatic center, and family entertainment venue. Fill up with excellent Korean cuisine, pizza, ice cream, craft beer, or local wines. For more information, visit DodgeTheOrdinary.com.
Attention hunters, are you ready to take your hunting game to the next level? OutdoorNews.com is your ultimate hunting partner. Stay up to date with the latest hunting trends, gear reviews, and expert tips from seasoned hunters. OutdoorNews.com provides the most comprehensive hunting news to ensure you're always in compliance with local laws. Whether you're a seasoned pro or a beginner, OutdoorNews.com is for you. We're passionate about preserving our hunting heritage and fostering responsible hunting practices. OutdoorNews.com, where hunters become legends.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Okoboji, Iowa has thousands of acres of lakes for fishing and public land for hunting, making it Iowa's best outdoor playground all year long. Start planning your next trip to Okoboji for fishing, hunting, swimming, or camping in one of our state parks. When you get off the water, enjoy our many locally owned restaurants and attractions, making Okoboji a favorite destination for your entire family. Plan your next trip at vacationokoboji.com. Okoboji, Iowa's best outdoor playground.
Thinking about buying or selling rural real estate in Minnesota? Whitetail Properties Real Estate is the premier brokerage for buying or selling hunting land, farmland, and country homes. With local professionals and a national presence, no other brokerage can provide you with the same buying or selling experience as Whitetail Properties. To learn more about the current real estate market or connect with your local land specialist, stop by their booth at the upcoming Minnesota Deer and Turkey Classic or visit whitetailproperties.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Driesline, glad to be with you. Thanks for sticking around for another segment. I hope you liked the broadcast. If you do, check us out online at outdoornews.com or give us a call at 800-535-5191. Or you can visit us out at Game Fair this weekend and or next weekend. And, of course, we'll have a booth at the State Fair also. Looking forward to meeting people and chatting with them face-to-face. I want to have someone who's never joined us on the broadcast before. His name is Mark Kenyon. He's with TheMeatEater.com. He's all over the place in the outdoors nationally, the Wired to Hunt podcast. Also the leader of the Working for Wildlife tour. We're going to talk about that and how that tour is coming to northeastern Minnesota. Mark, thanks for joining us. I know you live in a couple spots, either in Michigan or out west. Where are you now?
Yeah, thank you, Rob. Just arrived back in Michigan last night, around midnight. So I can hardly tell where I am these days, but yes, Michigan for the moment.
A native Michigander, you're a hardcore whitetailer, aren't you? You've carved out quite a niche in the national outdoor scene when it comes to whitetail hunting. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, whitetails were definitely my first love and where I first kind of kind of staked my claim within the outdoor world. Grew up hunting and fishing in northern Michigan, whitetails being our bread and butter. Coming out of college, when I began exploring what I want to do with the rest of my life, my deep love and passion for whitetails led me to start a website called Wired to Hunt, which over the last 15 plus years has transformed from just a website to then videos, to then a podcast, to then becoming a part of the Meat Eater Network. And now I continue to host the Wired to Hunt podcast, which is a whitetail focused show, and then host all of Meat Eater's whitetail films and TV shows. And then I also do a number of different projects, media, have written a book around public lands and conservation as well.
Tell us about this Working for Wildlife tour. Where did that first come from? Tell us a little bit about the fact that I guess it's coming to Minnesota.
Yeah, so the Working for Wildlife tour stemmed from the realization that I had about a year and a half ago that there are a lot of great events going on across the country in which folks, hunters and anglers, are given opportunities to volunteer on our public lands, to give back. These opportunities are out there, but not a lot of folks know about them. The average hunter or angler just isn't getting exposed to enough of these, and we're not seeing the participation that really these kinds of events deserve. So I want to try to change that by leading by example, by attending more of these myself, and then by shining a spotlight on them and making sure more folks know that this kind of thing is going on. So the idea was to travel across the country myself, go to a bunch of these different events and promote them to our platform, to our audience across the Meat Eater community, and then share those stories with as many people as we possibly could. So we have now had 9 of these events over the last about 18 months now. We've had 9 events.
All over the country, Mark?
All over the country, yeah. From as far west as Idaho, as far east as Massachusetts. We've been as far north. This Minnesota event will be our farthest north one. And then we were down in Mississippi last summer, and we've done everything from trash cleanups to collecting acorns for reforestation efforts to planting trees and food plots, removing invasive species. So it's been a great opportunity to do some good things while also spending time with others who care about the same things as you.
Is there a general website if folks want overarching information on the Working for Wildlife tour, Mark? Is just at themeateater.com, or is there a separate website?
The easiest way to do it probably would just be to Google the Working for Wildlife tour. Mm-hmm. I don't have an easy URL I can spin you on top of my head, but if you look up the Working for Wildlife tour, we do have a couple different landing pages there on the Meat Eater website that have outlined the events we've done, why we've done it, the outcomes, some of the results. And there's been just so many great stories coming out of this of people who've been inspired to do more, to continue to give back, to volunteer in larger capacities. So we've been able to make a on-the-ground impact on each of these individual days, but then the kind of snowball effect down the road has been really encouraging.
You listen to Outdoor News Radio. We're chatting with Mark Kenyon from the Wired to Hunt podcast and themeateater.com about his Working for Wildlife tour, which is, let's cut to the chase, coming to Minnesota. There is an effort on the Pine Island Wildlife Management Area on Sunday, August 24th. You're trying to get a bunch of folks together to kind of clean up a new 40-acre parcel, tear out some invasive species, that sort of thing on this new parcel of this WMA off Lake Vermilion. And this ties into you're also a board member for Sportsman for the Boundary Waters. Tell us about those connections.
Yeah. So being a part of the board for Sportsman for the Boundary Waters and trying to find ways to give back to such an incredible landscape, when chatting with the team about this possible project in which the folks at Sportsman were going to try to help improve the habitat there on the edges of the boundary waters, I got to thinking that this made a whole lot of sense to kind of collaborate with my Working for Wildlife tours. Here was an opportunity for volunteer work on a piece of public land that benefits hunters and anglers. And I have a platform to get a lot of folks to come out to these events and get involved. And so that's what we've done. As you mentioned, there's a 40-acre piece here in which we're trying to do some habitat improvement for whitetail deer, moose. We're going to be removing some invasive species, planting, I believe, white spruce and red oak trees as well, helping get some signage up, a new access point up for folks. So a lot of great things here we're going to be able to do. And the good news is that there's been a lot of interest in the project. We've already maxed out the number of volunteers we can have there on the ground with us on the 24th. So we're going to be working in collaboration with the DNR and folks from Sportsman for the Boundary Waters. And, you know, we're expecting somewhere between 50 and 75 volunteers who we will be actually boating out to the island to do this work for the day. So it's going to be a really good time to, you know, be around like-minded folks, get our hands dirty, and give back to a really, really special place.
And Sportsman for the Boundary Waters, an important organization working to preserve the integrity of the Boundary Waters for hunters and anglers and conservationists, future generations of Minnesotans and folks from all over the country. So part of this is hard work during the day, but then there's a reception, right, at night where anybody can show up and help raise a few bucks for Sportsman for the Boundary Waters. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing to take note of now, since we've kind of maxed out as far as volunteers on the ground. We are going to have this Pints for Pine Island event the evening of August 24th at the Grand Ely Lodge. That's going to be from 5 to 9 p.m. It's open to anyone, so even if you didn't sign up for the volunteer event, you can still come on out for the get-together afterwards. There are going to be speakers, including myself. There are going to be raffles, door prizes, a silent auction, food, drinks, the whole nine yards, live music. So it's going to be a very good time. We'll be able to support the Boundary Waters, raise some money for the area and future good projects like this. And again, man, I think there's something to be said about surrounding yourself with other people who care about these things. The community that you can tap into can just lead to so many great things down the line. So I'd encourage anyone listening to come on out, have a good time with us. And you never know, you might meet your next best hunting or fishing buddy too.
Again, it's called Pints for Pine Island. It is on Saturday, August 24th from 5 to 9 p.m. at Grand Ely Lodge. There's going to be a lot of thirsty people there after working all day as volunteers. Tell us a little bit about the Onyx Connection. How are they involved with this? Big business in the outdoors these days.
Yeah. Onyx, as I understand, has provided some grant funds to help pay for I imagine some of the food and drinks we'll be enjoying, some of the promotion of the event. And there's actually a lot of logistical challenges to get an event like this off the ground, especially the volunteer side of things, providing food for volunteers, providing transportation. People are getting, you know, ferried to the island, helping pay for the trees and the equipment we need for all these different things that are going to be done there on the ground that day. So big thank you to Onyx for helping us do some of that and supporting this event and the organization moving forward too. So I believe some of the folks from Onyx will be attending as well, I think, which is great. And we're looking forward to it.
So yeah, Sportsman for the Boundary Waters is adopting 40 acres in the Pine Island WMA and going to work to try to improve those acres for anybody who uses that unique chunk of public land. Lots more details, of course, available at sportsmanbwca.org. That's sportsmanbwca.org if you want to follow up and get more information after hearing Mark and I chat about it a little bit. Mark, you have much Boundary Waters experience. Why is the BWCA a special place to you?
Yeah, well, you know, I am, as you mentioned, not a Minnesotan. I am from Michigan, but I have viewed the Boundary Waters kind of as the gem of the upper Midwest. And I claim the upper Midwest as my home territory. And so really what we have there in the Boundary Waters is that pinnacle experience of wilderness that's available in this region. So while it's not my home state, I have a deep and abiding love and respect for it. I've had a couple opportunities to get up to that region, spend some time hunting, fishing, canoeing, camping out there. And it was just as transformative as I imagined it would be. I got to check all the boxes, you know, heard wolves, caught fish. Saw a little bit of deer sign and enjoy that clean, cold water. So it's a place I want to make sure is available for my children someday to enjoy. And I'm excited to take them up there someday soon.
Good. Well, one way that you and listeners can do that is by participating in this Pints for Pine Island WMA event, which is going to occur on Saturday, August 24th. Again, go to sportsmanbwca.org for complete details. A lot of fun spending a segment with you. Looking forward to seeing you up there, and good luck. Safe travels.
Thank you, Rob. Appreciate it.
All right. That was Mark Kenyon from TheMeatEater.com talking about this event coming up later this month in the Boundary Waters country. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Looking for the perfect summer getaway? Look no further than Minnesota's own Lake of the Woods. Welcome to the walleye capital of the world, where the next hook set could be your personal best fish of a lifetime. But it's not just about the fishing. From cozy resorts to charming lodges, Lake of the Woods offers summer fun for everyone. Plus, our charters and expert fishing guides are ready to make your experience unforgettable. Discover the magic of Lake of the Woods. Visit lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Minnesota's largest outdoor event returns for its 43rd year, Game Fair. Check out dozens of hunting, fishing, and dog training seminars. Visitors can see more than 300 exhibitors, plus enjoy games for dogs and youth. Test the latest equipment and enjoy the world-famous duck and goose calling contest. Game Fair runs 2 weekends, rain or shine, August 9th, 10th, and 11th, and August 16th, 17th, and 18th at the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey. See details at gamefair.com.
Ready for your next fishing adventure? Look no further than Lake City, Minnesota. Located in southeast Minnesota, nestled along the shores of Lake Pepin, this charming town offers some of the best fishing in the Midwest. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, Lake Pepin is teeming with walleye, bass, and more. And when you're not on the water, explore Lake City's quaint shops, delicious dining, and scenic beauty. Go to visitlakecity.org today and plan your trip to Lake City, Minnesota's South Shore.
Since 1967, Outdoor News has been Minnesota's go-to news source for all things out of doors. Generations of hunters and anglers have welcomed Outdoor News into their home each week, enjoying the most up-to-date news, features, columnists, fishing and hunting reports, gear reviews, and much, much more. For less than a dollar a week, you can join thousands of other Minnesota sportsmen and continue the long-standing tradition of subscribing to Outdoor News. Both print and digital versions are available. Start your subscription today at outdoornews.com/subscribe.
Every 2 seconds, someone special needs blood. A friend, a family member, a coworker. Someday, it could be you. In fact, right now, patients in local hospitals are relying on Memorial Blood Centers to be there with the blood they need to survive. And that means we're relying on you to step up and make a life-saving difference. Make a date to help save a life. Visit mbc.org today to make an appointment to donate blood. That's mbc.org.
I'm Chris Jakimick. I served in the United States Air Force, and I deployed 3 times. Being a veteran, it's interwoven into your DNA. It is really the absence of the connection and the purpose that can really drive a lot of veterans to some negative thoughts. For those who are in a suicidal crisis, the window of time to save somebody's life is very short. Our duty is to protect ourselves and protect our families, and one way you can do that is store your weapons safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everybody. Outdoor News Radio, final segment of this week's broadcast. I'm Rob Driesline. Our friend Tim Lesmeister will join us in a moment. I want to thank Mark Kenyon and Corey Goldsworthy, who joined us this week. If you missed those segments, go back to OutdoorNews.com, where you can listen to past broadcasts. You can also subscribe to Outdoor News there, or give us a call at 800-535-5191, or visit us out at Game Fair this weekend, the next 2 weekends, as well as the State Fair later this month. Tim, welcome. Good to see you. A lot of fun headlines in this week's paper. You got any bear cubs in the trunk of your vehicle?
2, and I'm actually going to take them down to Loring Park in the Twin Cities. I'm not going to use a bicycle to stage an accident, though. We're going to set them up to make it look like an accident. We'll see what happens when they find them. It's amazing, isn't it, that story?
Yeah, I had my New York editor do a little story for OutdoorNews.com. Folks can see it with some more specifics. I talked about it a little bit in my column, just kind of for fun. Yeah, so Robert F. Kennedy Jr., in an interview with Roseanne Barr, of all people, said that apparently, I don't know, was it 10 years ago or something like that, there was a bear cub found in Central Park with a bike on it. And he told Roseanne that he actually did it, that a vehicle ahead of him somewhere had hit this bear and it was dead. So he picked it up. He intended to skin it. I guess he was looking to make some outdoors hunter, trapper bona fides out of the deal. And I suppose he didn't get around to it, so he and some buddies, sound like there was some drinking involved, decided, let's go do a deep fake on all the folks in Central Park and dump this bear in the park and throw a bike on it, tee-hee, tee-hee, and run away. In an already bizarre political year, it really one you can't make up.
And, you know, what was interesting is that it, I think they thought it was just going to be kind of a funny joke, but it caused an incredible amount of commotion. They had this area all taped off. They thought it was a real scenario. They couldn't find the guy who was riding the bike. Bear was dead. The cops were everywhere.
They were asking the local zoos if there were any bears missing.
And they were really freaked out. The people in New York were really freaked out about this. It made the news. And I think that the people that did this, and it was RFK and his buddies. Now, of course, his buddies were drinking, but he wasn't.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Okay. All right. And they were all probably just thinking that what we did was may have been a little beyond the pale. And they kept their mouths shut for a long time.
Yeah.
But somebody found out about it, and they were going to let it rip. And so RFK thought, well, I better get the word out here because this does not look good. The color is bad.
Yeah, it was going to come out in a magazine. The New Yorker or something was going to report it. And so he tried to get ahead of it a little bit. Listen, I don't think this is the crime of the century. I don't think the fate of the republic rests on this at all. But it did get me wondering, what is legal in a situation like this? That's something I should know. I was kind of ashamed that I didn't understand, at least for Minnesota. So I talked to Joe Albert. I talked to Department of Public Safety. And they said, yeah, if you hit a deer or a bear or really any game animal, you can't just grab it because then you're illegally possessing that critter just like you would if you shot it and poached it. But you can contact a local conservation officer or local any local law enforcement. They have the ability to write you out a permit so you can take that deer. If you decide, hey, I'm going to go cut it up and make use of it so it doesn't go to waste, feed the family, you can do that. You can't do that with migratory birds. They're protected under the Federal Migratory Bird Species Act. You can't do it with a protected animal like a wolf. You can do it with game birds like a mallard or a pheasant. Again, you need the permit. So, my New York editor ran it down. Pretty much the same protocol exists out there. I'm not suggesting that RFK Jr. needs to be prosecuted. It sounds like the statute of limitations has expired anyway on it. But it was just kind of a talking point for me, like, okay, if this happened to me, what could I legally do so you don't get pinched, so you don't end up running around with an illegally possessed animal?
I have a friend who picks up roadkill all the time, throws it into his trunk, never calls for a permit, just takes it home. That's illegal.
Shouldn't be doing that.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
If you get pulled over for some odd reason and they find a dead raccoon in your trunk, you're going to get in trouble.
Right. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Dreeson here with Tim Lesmeister. We are winding down this week. Tim, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service issued a press release a couple weeks ago. We didn't get it in Outdoor News here until this week's print version of Outdoor News. The feds have unveiled a pilot program at 7 national wildlife refuges around the country. This stemmed from an initial effort, I think, from the Biden administration to try to crack down on lead for any form of hunting on national wildlife refuges. Obviously already illegal for waterfowl, but they wanted to, I think, mostly eliminate it on, you know, for big game hunting too. And the sporting community said, you know, hold up here, you know, instead of having this massive backlash from the firearms industry, is there something we can do together to try to work toward phasing this out voluntarily and not regulating it? And they came up with this pilot program, which is going to give hunters, if they show proof of purchase for using non-lead ammo, basically probably mostly copper bullets at these refuges, if they show that proof of purchase, they can get a little prepaid credit card compensating them for that. I don't know. I think it's kind of a cool little program. I think it's a good idea. Tim, what is your take?
I think it's going to show hunters that copper bullets are very effective for shooting big game. Copper is actually a pretty good bullet for big game. It expands nicely. It leaves a big hole. It doesn't probably have the thump power that lead does. Lead has real shock power. But a copper bullet does expand nicely, and it does kill well, and it leaves no lead in the carcass at all, which, you know, is typically marginal anyway. But I believe that this is going to be a good opportunity for hunters to start talking about how effective it is. It's going to put them in a position where they'll want to use copper and even bismuth, and it's going to make start the change happening.
You and I have talked about the lead issue a lot. I personally choose to use non-toxic wherever I go for whatever I'm hunting. I use copper bullets for big game. I feel pretty strongly that I do not want a chunk of lead in a gut pile that I have left in a forest or a field or something to end up killing anything else, whether it be a bald eagle, whether it be a raptor, whether it be some other creature that comes and eats that gut pile. I don't want to be responsible for that. That's why I personally choose to use copper. And there's no doubt, there are eagles. There are other birds dying as a result of bullets in remaining, you know, offal or gut piles out there on landscape. That is happening. Is it having a population level effect on bald eagles or other raptors? No, it absolutely is not. I am convinced of that. And that is why I generally have said, I don't want to impose all-out bans and restrictions on lead bullets within the industry because I don't think it's having population-level effects. I was talking to Lan Tawney a little bit about this, Tim. He was on this committee that helped put together this proposal. And he said the compliance levels, once people start using copper, is just stratosphere. It's like 80, 85%. Once people start using this stuff, they stick with it. So I really think this is a good way, like you say, introduce people to non-toxics without hardcore regulations and, you know, kind of nudge people forward with what we want to do long term is eventually get lead off the landscape.
When it comes to bullets, I think copper just as good as lead. Price is not that different. I'd say make the transition. There's no reason to be shooting lead. And in cases where you get an incentive for going out on these refuges and using copper bullets, take advantage of the situation.
I think, you know, the Biden administration, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service deserve a tip of the hat for coming up with this program and unveiling it. I think it's a good, happy medium. I talked to members of the committee who also pointed out that, you know, if there is a regime change in Washington, D.C., they think this plan could withstand an administration from either political side of the spectrum. I hope they're right, and because I think it is a good program, and I hope whoever's in charge in D.C. will let this program unfurl and work. Because if it does, if they get good compliance on these seven starter refuges, I think it's going to spread to other refuges across the country. And I did point out in my comment, one of the refuges is Trumbull National Wildlife Refuge down on the Mississippi River, right on in border country down there.
Yeah, big stupid deer in Trempealeau, isn't there?
I had a little fun with that, yeah, recounting how my dad, when he managed that refuge, they did a hunt in 1982. It was the first deer hunt there in years, and people were just freaked out about it. There's even a local outdoor writer, Tim, I think, wrote something like, I'm pro-hunting, but this is too much. It's going to be a bloodbath. And like I say, the deer, even in a situation like that where they hadn't been hunted in years, they got smart real fast once the blaze orange clad folks started walking around shooting at them.
Oh, absolutely. You know, they're used to a certain pattern in the woods. And as soon as it changes, they go on high alert. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. And within a couple of years, it was like any other special hunt. Way back in 1982, I was just 12 years old. I was talking to my dad about that, Tim. And he said, oh, no, that was mid-80s. I said, Dad, I think I was pretty young. I think I was, you know, 11 years old, something like that. And he looked, my old man still had the data in some file cabinet. I mean, the guy's been retired for 15 years. He still had it. And he pulled it up. He said, yep, it was 1982. And he knew exactly how many deer had been taken, how many permits. It's like, wow, one organized individual.
By the way, that area does still produce some real monster bucks.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's lowland, swampy river bottoms, and it is really a great area for trophy animals.
Yeah, and it's adjacent to agriculture. It's adjacent to bluff country. A lot of areas for big bucks to hide. That's you bet. That's good deer country. Well, Tim, it was fun recap and a good long segment with you. Thanks for spending with me.
I'll catch up to you soon.
We will talk to Tim this time next week. Everybody have a great week out of doors. We'll talk to you this time next week. I'm Rob DeReesline signing off for Outdoor News Radio. Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.